and welcome to the podcast made to hopefully make you feel a little bit better about the world and a little bit more connected to the nonprofit world. We are going to be chatting with nonprofit leaders and founders, giving them a platform to share their stories and collaborate with others, because we believe that when we join hands, we can stand that much taller and make the world better. So sit back, plug in, and let's create some good. This is Nonprofit Connect with me, Matt Barnes. Well, hello, and welcome to Nonprofit Connect.
I'm Tiffany Pope.
Oh, dang. You just jumped in there. Wow.
Had to get it before you.
I don't know if I appreciate that.
How dare you?
I found buttons and they're fun.
They're scary.
No way. They're
Who
awesome.
Wants to listen
I can
to
do
that?
I can do small robot.
Small robot. Large robot.
Megaphone.
And then, you know.
Oh, that one's funny.
It's cute, isn't it?
Just, you know, I'm having fun with the technology.
Having way too much fun.
Because I can. So Tiff's back. She's been out for a bit because of leg injury.
Yeah. You know what's funny? McCoy, which is
my
Matt's son.
Yeah.
Every time
one of the three.
Yeah.
One of the three sons.
One of the many.
One of the three sons. One of the many children's.
Every time I go over, he's like, is your leg still broken? I'm like, you know what? Yeah, my leg's broken.
It's not broken. She. What did you do? You tore something.
I tore my LCL, tore my popliteus tendon, sprained my ACL, and sprained my PCL.
Okay, so the only one of those things that I've ever heard of before was ACL.
Yeah.
All those other things, I didn't even know we had in our legs.
Honestly, same.
Okay.
But anytime I heard about LCL, anything CL, I knew it was trouble. So,
and what super adventurous thing were you doing when this happened? Let's share with the people.
You know, I was just doing most awesome thing ever called practice.
I mean, you could tell people you were in a championship game of some sort for softball.
And I made the diving catch and we won the game.
Right. And the injury got you but really it was just she was at practice and
we were doing a drill.
Twisted your foot the wrong way, basically, right?
Yeah, I landed wrong. Yeah, it was.
Man.
What a story.
I know.
What a story.
It could have been everybody was kung fu fighting, but no. Just bad softball practice.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're glad you're back.
Thank you.
These all air in different orders. So for the listeners, that may not make any sense. Maybe you were never gone. I don't know how this
Who
is
knows?
Gonna go. Anyway, so today, first of all, if you're joining us for the first time, welcome to Nonprofit Connect. This is a podcast where we are really working to connect nonprofits.
Yeah.
Like the name says. It's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Because people in the nonprofit industry often feel isolated, disconnected, and don't get the opportunity to feel connected and learn from each other very much. And so we wanted to facilitate that. We do live events here monthly in Newport Beach, California at Rogue Collective, our space. But then we started this podcast to be able to bring in a larger community and provide this internationally.
Ooh.
And today, we're going international, baby.
We're going big.
So I'm really excited because our guest today is somebody that the work he's been doing and the organization he works for, I've been following since they started 20 years ago, which coincidentally, Tiff here is celebrating her 20th birthday.
Next week.
So I feel incredibly old. But our guest today is David McNair, and he is the executive director for global policy for the One Campaign. And if you don't know the One Campaign, it's one of the largest nonprofits in the world. This is Bob Geldof and Bono and a lot of big names who were involved in starting the One Campaign, named after the U2 song One. And they've just done amazing work in transforming the world, really, in so many ways, and providing with debt relief and AIDS medicines and to people who need it. And it's really incredible. There are literally millions of people who are alive because of the work that the One Campaign has done.
Wow. That's so crazy.
And I talked to David, and man, it was so cool to hear his perspective. First of all, just how normal of a guy he is, calling me all the way from Ireland, and how, even though they are one of the largest nonprofits in the world, still on a larger scale, dealing with the same issues as people we work with here in Orange County or across the globe, like small, medium, large nonprofits. It's scale, but it's some of the same issues. had some great perspectives and things to share about the work that they're doing, but specifically about the challenges that nonprofits are up against and how they're addressing that and sort of adapting and changing with the times. So really excited about this. Make sure to come back after this brief message to hear from David McNair from The One Campaign. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We are brought to you by Rogue Creatives. I started Rogue Creatives in 2016 because I saw so many people doing amazing things, like life-changing work. And either they're spending all their time trying to figure out how to connect with people and get their story out there instead of doing what they love, what they got into it to do, and what they were good at. Or they ignored all that and they just did what they loved, but not enough people knew about them. Or nobody knew about them. Even worse. My background is in education and organizational leadership. When I was doing my master's in education, I learned that the best way to educate someone, to connect their heads and their hearts, is through story. In my organizational leadership program, I learned how to help an organization define its character, its voice, its values, its personality. So I took the best of those and I combined them to create the strategic storytelling framework that we use at Rogue Creatives to define an organization's character so that we could tell their story while freeing the organization up to do what they do best. We've helped dozens of nonprofits define their personalities and increase their reach as they bring new donors and volunteers into their stories. And as you well know, more donors means more money, means more people getting the help that they need. And that means the world's becoming a better place because of the character in your story. So get started today by visiting roguecreatives.com/NPC. That's NPC for Nonprofit Connect. And schedule a free brand consultation and take our free online brand character quiz. That's roguecreatives.com/NPC to begin defining your brand character today. There's no commitment or risk for you at all. And come on, don't you want to meet us? We're super fun, I promise. Rogue Creatives. Seriously, creative storytelling. Okay, enough from me. Back to me and our guest. I'm here with David McNair. David, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's funny. I'm a huge fan of the work you guys are doing at One and have been for a very long time. And this morning, my team did not tell me who I was interviewing until I got here and gave me the things. And I'm going, wait a minute. One Camp. Oh, okay. I know this stuff. So I'm very excited to have you here. This is great. We always start off with three random questions to kind of break the ice. I got a list of about 100 random questions and we picked three of them randomly. So are you good? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Who would you want to play you in a biopic of your life?
Kate Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett. That's a good choice.
I think she's an amazing actor. And you know, she did that thing with Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan.
Well, she's got range. She could do it. What did you have for breakfast today?
Porridge.
Porridge? When you say porridge, what is that? You know, for us Americans, we don't really do. Is that oatmeal?
Yeah, steel cut oatmeal.
Oh, okay. So it's just what you call it versus what we call it. Learning the lingo. And then where is somewhere everyone in the world should go visit?
Well, I live in the west of Ireland.
Okay.
Which it rains most of the time.
Yeah.
But when it's not raining, it's the most beautiful place in the world. So if you can kind of find a window where it's good weather, then everyone should come here.
I've been there when it's raining. It is beautiful then as well. And I will say, maybe of all the countries I've visited, the Irish were the most hospitable. Just so kind and welcoming. And I don't know if I just got lucky or if that's the reputation of the country, but I had a great experience in Ireland.
Yeah, no, it's a great place.
So obviously you are the executive director of the One Campaign. And tell me about your origin story. Where'd you come from? How'd you get started? And how'd you end up doing this?
So I grew up in Belfast in Northern Ireland in the 1980s, which was in the middle of a civil conflict. It wasn't much fun. And it was also kind of very, very insular. Very introspective, very divided, put people in boxes and kind of ascribed viewpoints to different people depending on like what religion they were and so on. And when I was 18, I went on a trip to India and that kind of blew my mind, just the kind of like the smells, the sights, the different like ways of seeing the world, but also the inequality. And I came back from that trip, which was just like 3 weeks or something, and spent 6 months being really angry because I just couldn't get my head around like why these kind of extreme inequalities existed. So I kind of decided at the end of that period of anger that I was going to use it productively. I didn't want to get involved in like charity work, kind of helping. I wanted to like ask why inequalities existed and try and kind of change the systems that drove them. So then I did a PhD and I got involved in campaigning around the Jubilee Debt campaign, campaigns around trade justice. And that kind of got me hooked on this idea that you can kind of use your voice in a political way to convince decision makers to change policy that will have impact on a kind of a large scale. And I've seen that happen. I mean, a lot of the time it feels like you're banging your head against the wall, but when it works, it really works. And I've seen it happen a few times and it's pretty inspiring to be part of, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of the One Campaign stuff started with Bono's work. Is that around that? Was it kind of in cooperation or was it that?
Yeah. So I got involved. So One's been kind of running for like 20 years. This year is our 20th anniversary. I got involved about 10 years ago. But even the work that I was doing before that, Bono was very involved. I mean, the kind of the origin story of One is really that an activist called Jamie Drummond was on a trip to the place in Ethiopia that had experienced famine. And he heard the statistic that the amount of money raised during Live Aid was being paid by Ethiopia every year in debt repayments. And he had this light bulb moment where he was like, okay, well, Bono and Geldof need to like know this. So he spent, I think it must have been like a year, just trying to get a call with Bono. And eventually Bono like relented and said yes. And then that kind of kicked off a whole movement around activism. And Bono got very involved in the fight against HIV and AIDS. And at the time, this was a situation where if you contracted HIV in the United States, you could get access to treatment. If you contracted HIV in Malawi, it was a death sentence. And the difference between those two experiences was two pills a day, which cost $2. So it came from this idea like where you're born shouldn't determine whether you live, that kind of simple principle. And we want to fight for the resources and the changes that basically make that principle come to life.
Yeah, man. And I remember that marking, it seems like a bit of a shift, sort of leading the way in that activism and even in the way that nonprofits can fight for the causes that they're looking for and stepping up and getting involved in politics and that, because it was kind of a revolutionary concept of, I remember the picture of Bono with Jesse Helms and you're like, wait, what? You know, and you're, that we got to put politics aside and differences aside to find the things that we can agree on so that we can make some changes in the world, which is something that I think is obviously maybe at its most difficult place right now that I've ever seen again. I don't know how that is in Ireland. I know in the States, it's probably more divisive here than I've ever seen. I don't know, how's the approach to that had to change or adapt? And how has that affected the work that One's doing?
The basic premise was we can disagree on lots of things, but if the one thing we agree on is important enough, then we can come together and kind of make change. And that was part of the rationale for Bono meeting Jesse Helms. He realized it was the person at the time, despite being considered to have very disagreeable views. He held the purse strings. And if we wanted to make some change happen, we needed to convince him. And the kind of core principle that we've kind of been working on is like, let's bring people from diverse backgrounds together to agree on this one principle that where you're born shouldn't determine whether you live. What has become really difficult in the past 7 or so years is politics, as you said, has become more divisive and the media has become really fragmented. And the idea of like these kind of big tent bringing lots of people together is becoming more and more difficult. So part of what we're having to do out of necessity is to say, we still believe in that principle of bringing diverse voices together. So let's do that. But we need to do it in a much more kind of targeted way where we identify the decision that we feel needs to be made. We map who the decision maker is, who they listen to, who they trust, kind of messages that they respond to, and then deploy resources towards that decision maker. So in that sense, we're kind of much more targeted in how we kind of deploy our kind of campaign tactics, the evidence we use, all that. So in the past, you know, where we'd have like a kind of massive brands, big concert, all that kind of thing, we're just kind of much more targeted. It might be the right phone call to the right person in the right moment that kind of like shifts the dial on that key decision. And that's how we tend to think.
The strategy would have to change because now, I mean, I was just having this conversation recently here in the States. The Constitution has pretty regularly received amendments over the centuries since we've started. And that today, I can't even see how that would ever even happen, because if one side is doing something, the other side automatically is like, no, we're not even going to talk about it. It's to that point where 20 years ago, you could go, okay, you were different on this and this, let's get together on this. But I think adapting that is really interesting. And it's an interesting topic because I think every nonprofit, everybody in this sector has to deal with that in some way. And at least if not on this specific subject, but they have to deal with the idea of change and changing strategy as culture changes and how we approach different topics and different things. What are some of the other ways that one has adapted its sort of processes and strategies over the years?
To pick up on your earlier point, this kind of divisiveness, in some senses, you can see that as a kind of an impossible conundrum. Like, people aren't going to come together. Another way of looking at it is this kind of approach of bringing people together is needed more than ever because of that division. And there are lots of really interesting work happening in the kind of civic tech space, where they're basically, you know, different communities that would be seen as kind of polarizing. If you pull them on what they care about, often they care about the same things. And there's this tool called Polix, which has been used extensively in Taiwan to basically kind of figure out what do like these diverse groups care about and how can we use that to design policy. So part of what we've been thinking about is like, how can we use tactics like that, techniques like that, to say, let's kind of identify these issues, identify the kind of energy where people are motivated and care, and then kind of channel that into a political strategy. The other thing I'd say is a big part of what we need to do, whether it's in Europe or North America or Africa, is to mobilize the middle economically, the middle politically. And often they are kind of turned off by internationalism. They're turned off by kind of doom and gloom messages about climate change. What they care about, and there's been extensive polling on this, is they care about protecting things that they love. And they want to do it with people that they trust. And therefore, if we can kind of say, okay, we know climate change is happening. We know it's divisive. There's lots of different opinions about it, despite all the kind of scientific evidence. But we do know that action in your local area to protect your local park, working with your local community, could actually be a powerful thing. So there are groups that are now kind of developing campaigns in partnership with local sports teams, church groups, whatever, to say, okay, let's take action, whether something as small as like not using a plastic bag, to writing to your MP, to buying an electric car. Let's almost gamify that, bring a group together to say we can score points on this game collectively as a team, and then kind of ladder that up into kind of some political action. And we've used that a little bit. So a lot of the work that we do is on making the case for global health and making the case for countries like the US and UK and France and Germany kind of committing money to that. There's a lot of skepticism around whether that money actually delivers impact, even though there's a huge amount of evidence that it does. So what we did was we said, okay, we've got these funds like the Global Fund on AIDS, TB and Malaria, and Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. They've got very, very kind of like nuanced kind of impact metrics. Let's disaggregate that by the amount of money that each country has committed, and then disaggregate it again using tax data by region. So we can say that the US state of Delaware, through its tax contributions to the US federal budget, and therefore the fight against AIDS, has saved, I forget what the number, but it was like 300,000 lives or something. And as a result, Chris Coons, the senator, was like, okay, well, I can use this to make the case for why I can be proud of what Delaware has done and I want to vote for this in operations and so on. So that kind of like making it tangible, making it local, and bringing people together on these big international issues, I think is really, really important.
Yes, I think what I've seen in our work with nonprofits has been, if we can address issues and not the politics. Before, maybe it was, you could go straight to the politicians, but if you can talk to people about, like if I say climate change, people have that associated so much with politics that they immediately go to what their political leaning is on that. If I talk about something like a subcategory of that, something that is specific, pollution, whatever it is, like people go, oh yeah, it's just terrible. And it's kind of the same across. So if I can engage somebody on something and before they associate it with the politics, then they're more likely to come together because you can go, yeah, I mean, we can all agree it's smoggy or it's this, it's that, you know, whatever. It's been crazy. There's more pollution. There's more this, or whether it's that or it's homelessness or it's whatever. As we're doing messaging with nonprofits, if we make it about that sort of top level stuff, it's so tied to politics. But if we can drill down a little bit, it becomes more relatable to people and they get attached to it before they realize they're dealing with something that's been politicized, and we can hopefully kind of grab them in and engage them a little bit, which is different than what it's had to be in the past because everything's been so politicized.
Yeah, totally. And I think this idea of like people filtering information through what they already think or believe is a real kind of challenge. I mean, it's not a new challenge, but one of the things we've been looking into is the role of humor. And we actually got someone from American University to come in and do like a kind of a lecture to our team, basically looking at how if someone just receives straight information like a news broadcast, they're going to filter that through, okay, well, I don't believe that, and therefore I'm going to like selectively choose the information that fits with my belief system. If you make a joke about something, those filters are kind of let down for a moment and you can engage or enter into a debate in a different kind of way. So we've been kind of thinking about ways in which we can use humor or satire to kind of puncture those barriers somehow and kind of encourage people to think differently about issues.
Absolutely. And I think part of that, and whether it's humor or it's just bringing joy, it's bringing positivity, people are so starved for positive in the world. And if we can separate that from politics, the days of, which really should never have been a thing when you look at ethical storytelling and all that kind of stuff, but the days of the videos of the sad kids and all that, are people don't want to hear that message anymore. And it's not effective. It's exploitative. And it also, people know the world sucks. They don't need to be reminded of that all the time. It's just like, God, man. So they might give you a one-time donation to make you go away. But to get people to join in, it's the excitement of what's being done to address a problem. It's the hope. It's the joy in it. The humor, those things that they're not typically associating with these topics because they've been so tied to politics. If we can bring the other side of it, the things that they're sort of starving for when those topics come up, it changes the whole feel of it. But it's been a challenge. I mean, we've been making a lot of headway with it, but it's been a challenge to get, over the last decade, nonprofits on board with that at first because they were so used to, we got to do the sob story. We've got to really pull on the heartstrings. But now we're starting, I think, really see the fruits of not leaning in that direction.
I think it's so important because certainly in my view, the mission is not charity. We're not just trying to like put a band-aid on some kind of problem that's happening right now. The mission is equality and dignity. If in raising money for your thing, you're kind of undermining that core principle, then the starting point is wrong. So I think you're totally right on.
So a few months ago, I'm sitting in the Sphere in Las Vegas watching you two. And I literally was having the thought of, because I had just seen some stuff on what you guys are doing and different statistics about Africa. And I'm sitting there watching and going like, how many of these lives were saved because Bono went and knocked on these doors? Because this guy that I'm watching sing and perform did this thing. But I guess my question is, if you didn't have a Bono, if you didn't have the kind of access and resources and somebody wanted to start something to tackle a problem as large as that, is it possible, A, and B, if so, what would your, I guess, suggestion be for somebody? Where do they start?
Well, I think the first thing to say is, like 20 years ago, whenever all this started, we lived in a very different world. And what Bono talks about in his book is like, celebrity is currency. You need to choose how to spend it. But he also talks about the fact that celebrity will get you the first meeting. Credibility will get you every meeting after that. And therefore, I think there are doors that can be opened when you have that access. But actually, what really drives authenticity in a mission is when you've got evidence, when you've got people who genuinely care and are engaged, when you're bringing people together. And a lot of the work that one does, I mean, sure, Bono is a figurehead. He can make calls and kind of make things happen. But often it's the local activist who's calling their congressperson or the local activist in the north of England that's going to kind of MP surgery who's saying like this stuff matters. That's what actually makes the difference because it's rooted, it's authentic, and it's about bringing people together as a kind of political force to say this matters. So I think if you've got a kind of a core mission, if you've got the ability to communicate why it matters and bring people together, then it's the authenticity that matters more than anything, you know?
Absolutely. And I think my creative agency, that's what we do. We work with a lot of nonprofits on getting their stories told and making sure that we can do it in a way that brings people into the story and give them access to that. How have you guys done that in a variety of ways? I mean, I'm assuming over the years, how do you continue to do that and evolve to bring people into that story and give them access to feel like they're a part of the mission?
Well, a big part of it is helping people to understand the power of their voice. So we have a program of recruiting like what we call them youth ambassadors. But basically, we identify a cohort of like maybe, I think it's about 300 or 400 people every year who are committed to the issues, but they learn in detail about the policy. So they're highly credible. They learn how to kind of build confidence when they're going to meet with an elected decision maker. And they become really powerful activists because they can write to their local newspaper. They can build social media platforms. They can go into meetings and politicians love to meet a young person. We do a lot of kind of pledges where coming up to an election, we'll ask candidates to say, will you sign this pledge to confirm that you'll support our mission if you get into office? And then we come back and hold them to account. So there's a kind of understanding the issues, having the skills, and then having a rooted community that we often bring them together. You'll have activists from Nigeria lobbying in Brussels with activists from France or activists from the US. So it's often providing that kind of platform opportunity and skill set. And those people have then gone on to, like, when they move beyond, because the program lasts about a year, they go on to, like, start their own things because they've got the skills and the networks to do that. And, you know, some of our alumni network have started their own organizations fighting gender-based violence, fighting deforestation, whatever it might be. But it's almost like the legacy of people who do this when they're young, get the bug, have the skills, and kind of recruit more people to the mission, whatever they choose that mission to be, is like a really powerful thing, you know?
Yeah, it's an activation effect. You're exposing people to the power of what their voice can do and then giving them the opportunity to kind of figure out how they want to apply that, which is really super cool. I mean, I really believe that activating the sort of younger generation is going to be the key because they're less jaded than I think some of the older generation might be, or less politically divisive. And they want to see that change. Just a lot of them don't know how to do it. And if we can give them the opportunity to use their voice and see that they have that potential, that power, then the future looks a lot better, I hope.
I mean, that's my personal story. I kind of got involved to how it could work. And I decided to effectively commit the majority of my life to this cause, you know. And if we can have more and more people having that kind of experience when they're in their late teens or early 20s, and then going on to do powerful social good work wherever they might end up, it's a powerful thing.
I've been having a lot of conversations, both on this podcast and externally, recently about the idea that people like me and other people that work with nonprofits have spent so long helping nonprofits get better at saying, we need your money, help us, help us, help us. And maybe the shift needs to be helping culture realize you have a voice. There are things you're passionate about, and nonprofits are your avenue to making a change, to being a part of something that can actually make a positive impact in the world. And instead of just helping nonprofits get better at saying, please give us your money, really helping people to see that these nonprofits are here to help you change the world and be able to use your voice and use your funds and use your time and to be able to make an impact. Because I don't think that's how culture views the nonprofit sector completely. And it would be obviously a huge shift to get people thinking that way. So we've been talking about, like, with little kids, like, how do we, this idea of just helping them see that there are these avenues as you're growing up to see the things you're passionate about and find the people who are doing that work and connect with them. And I'm interested to see how those things play out. What's sort of the youngest demographic you've worked with? Is it sort of the college age students?
Yeah, it tends to be. We don't go any younger than that, really. But I mean, you should say that about the distinction between raising money and kind of voice. Like, one's tagline is, we don't want your money, we want your voice, precisely because that's the signal that we want to send. And it's interesting because we've done that at a kind of within countries, like within the US, within France, within Germany for a long time. Now our whole strategy is to say, okay, we want to mobilize credible African voices to channel voices into G20 countries that hold the purse strings. And because of the world that we live in and, like, historical anachronisms and all the rest, the real power over the IMF, the World Bank, like, the key funding decisions still sit in the Treasury Department in the US, in the UK, in France and Germany. And we did this calculation, which is crazy to me, like, per capita, the power of a US citizen's voice within the IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund, such a powerful global force, is 70 times an Ethiopian citizen's voice. And yet Ethiopia is far more affected by the IMF than the US. So if we can bring together Ethiopian activists who've got, like, credible stories on what needs to change with US activists who have 70 times the voice that they have, then it's like a powerful thing. And channeling those voices and addressing this international democratic deficit in a way within these institutions, that's the whole thing that we want to do now, you know?
Yeah, if American voices can become sort of the megaphone for the voices of the people who are actually there, who need to be amplified, then it's the opportunity to, it's the perfect partnership to actually make some changes. That's great. I'm super impressed. I mean, obviously, I think everybody's pretty impressed and very well aware of the work that One has done over the last 20 years, but the ways that you have grown and pivoted and not just, you know, it would have been very easy for any group to go, okay, we did it. We did that thing. And so we're done now. We've focused on this problem and we're just going to keep doing that. But the ways that you've adapted and grown and expanded have been very inspirational. And I think a great example to other nonprofits. And I'm so glad that you're here because I think most of our listeners are probably more medium to small nonprofits who are trying to figure out how do we grow, and to see like there's opportunities to do that and to adjust and shift and change as culture changes.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, like, while we've seen like huge success over the last 20 years, now because of the politics is shifting and geopolitics and the economy, a lot of the things we achieved are now going in reverse. We actually did some analysis that we published this week that shows that net financing to developing countries is now negative. So more money is coming out in debt repayments than is going in and other forms of public finance. And that at a time where extreme poverty is on the rise in the wake of COVID, hunger is increasing, you know, we're seeing more conflict. So actually this kind of activism is needed more than ever, and we need to keep at it, even though it's really, really hard.
Is that a problem? I mean, some people may perceive it as, well, they did that, now we don't have to deal with that anymore. You know, like, is it that constant education of this problem has not been solved? There's still work to be done. Is that a battle that you have to fight?
Yeah, and that's particularly acute in the fight against HIV and AIDS. People in the US think it's done, and it's not, because there are still huge parts of the population, particularly in Africa, who are contracting the virus and don't have access to antiretrovirals. So there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. It kind of saying, yes, this still matters. Yes, we still need to invest. And this isn't just a kind of moral case or a charitable case. This is about us all being safe and secure together and building a more prosperous world together. And that's a hard argument to make whenever people are squeezed at home, but we need to keep making it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you are. And I'm so excited to continue to watch and the work that you all are doing. We always close with a few questions. The first one is always, is there one piece of advice, anything else that you would want to say to a nonprofit leader out there as they are climbing whatever hill they're climbing, fighting whatever battle they're fighting, a piece of advice or a thought or anything?
Well, let's say, I mean, authenticity is key. Just be yourself, keep making the case, be genuine, but also look after yourself, because it's a marathon, not a sprint, and it's rough. And we need to kind of find people who we can kind of rely on and who we can kind of fight together in this battle.
That leads perfectly into the next question, which is, how important is community to you, and how do you connect with your community?
Yeah, I mean, it's fundamentally important. I often kind of think my work not as a set of institutions and more like an ecosystem. So a lot of the people that I worked in with my first job with an NGO called Christian Aid, they've gone on to do like amazing things in different organizations to set up new things. And we're still in touch, and I can still call and say, like, I'm struggling with this. What do you think? So that kind of thing is so important. And I always say, when people leave my team, I'm like, you're not actually leaving. You're just going to pursue this mission somewhere else, and we're behind you, and please keep in touch, kind of thing. So I see that as fundamentally important.
Yeah. And I mean, that's exactly why we're doing this. I think nonprofit work can feel so isolating sometimes. To just allow nonprofits to connect, to realize we're all dealing with the same things in different areas and what we can learn from each other. Who is your biggest inspiration in the nonprofit world?
There's so many like wonderful people that I have worked with. Gail Smith, who was my boss until quite recently, she is so committed, like a lifelong commitment, and so genuine. And I've been on calls with her when she gets like a phone call from the White House and she says, oh, sorry, like I'll phone you back, because she kind of values the person that she's with. So she's definitely an inspiration, but there are many.
Nice. And finally, what is the thing in your job that brings you the most joy?
I think it's seeing people flourish. I often say to my team, like, I've never worked in such a great team. And whenever you can kind of seeds of potential that help people develop ideas or programs or concepts that I would never have come up with and could never do, but they can see an opportunity and they go for it. That kind of really inspires me, because it shows that really what we're doing is kind of planting seeds, and people go off and kind of do whatever they want to do with that. But if they can do that in a way that like makes them happy and delivers impact, that's amazingly fulfilling to me.
That's awesome. Well, David, thank you so much for being here, for doing this. Where can people find out more information and connect with One Campaign and with you?
You can go to one.org, one.org. You can sign up to our weekly newsletter, which is called Aftershocks. If you just go to data.one.org/aftershocks, and you can get loads of information on the issues we're working on. You can get access to data, and you can also get in touch with me on LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever. I always love hearing from people.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Thanks so much for your time, Matt, and have a great week.
You too. Yes, my friends, we have come to the end of this amazing episode of Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes. You made it! Thank you so much for listening this far. And if you'd like to hear more from Nonprofit Connect, brought to you by Rogue Creatives, make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on so you don't miss out. We don't care which one. It doesn't really matter. Just listen. Just subscribe. Just make it come right into your potholes every week so you can hear what's going on. Also, if you're interested in working with us or want to reach out and tell us how amazing we are, learn more, whatever it is, you can visit our website, npconnect.roguecreatives.com. Or just go to roguecreatives.com and you can find the rest. Okay, that's pretty much it. Okay. Bye-bye. Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes is hosted and executive produced by me, Matt Barnes, with an assist by my chaos coordinator, Tiffany Pope. Production is by our amazing friends over at Fame, the B2B podcast agency, along with Belinda Carter-Thompson and the team here at Rogue Creatives. Production lead is Luke Audie at Fame. Writing is by Sam Hollis at Fame and Matt Barnes and Taylor Bolanos from Rogue Creatives. Nemanja Koljaja of Fame is our audio editor, and Arslan Yakub from Fame is our video editor. Creative direction is by Corey Hill of Rogue. Our artwork is designed by Hopo Kelly and Joshua Marino at Rogue and Ian Salas of Fame. Theme music is composed and performed by Jared Atherton of Chapters. Luke Audie of Fame does our booking and our guest relations. Huge thanks to our amazing guest for joining us for this episode and to all of you incredible listeners for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, and I don't know why you wouldn't have, don't forget to help us spread some good by giving us a good review. Preferably, you know, 5 stars with lots of words saying how amazing we are on whatever platform you're listening on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever it is. Also, tell your friends and subscribe so we can come straight into your potholes each and every time we have a new episode. For more information about Nonprofit Connect or to join us at a live event here in Orange County, California, visit our website, npconnect.roguecreatives.com. We'll catch you next time. This has been a Rogue Creatives production.